When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to All the Books, a weekly show of recommendations and enthusiasm regarding the week's new book releases. This is episode 419, and today we are talking about books being released on June 20th, 2023, and more. I'm Liberty Hardy, here with Tirza Price, and we're coming to you from BookRiot.com. Tirza, hello!
Hey there, how are you?
I'm good. I'm giggling because, you know, we talked, what, like an hour and 15 minutes before we started recording? Like, we're catching up.
Yeah, we did do that.
And then we get on here and we talk like, hey, how are you? Like, I don't already know.
Yeah, like we just haven't been talking about everything for the last hour. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. It's all an illusion, listeners.
That's right. It's an illusion, Michael. So this is episode 419. I did remember to look up the area code for 419, just for Toledo and other Ohio cities. So hello to everybody in that area. Toledo was like one of the first places I knew about when I was very small because my parents watched MASH and like Cleaner was from Toledo. So I was like, Toledo is a real place, but that didn't always work because I also thought that Crabapple Cove, Maine was a real place, which is where Hawkeye Pierce was from, and that is not a real place. Just like the place that Jessica Fletcher is from, not a real place in Maine. So I guess like they make up those coves for Maine, but Toledo is a real place, and hello to everyone in Toledo. And Tirza, I have a story that I didn't tell you while we were talking.
Ooh, yes.
It's a very exciting story, for me anyway. I came home the other day, and there was a dog on our porch.
Oh.
Like our porch is, like, on the side of our house, and, like, it goes up to the door and then goes back down into our backyard. And I was getting out of the car, and this dog came running over the porch and headed straight for the very busy road that we live on. So I grabbed it by the collar. It didn't have any tags that said where it was from. So I love dogs. I don't have a dog because I'm super lazy. Like, I just don't think that I'd be like, I don't want to go outside. I don't want to, you know. So I don't have a dog, but I got one of my husband's guitar straps, and I attached it to its collar, and possibly because I watched a lot of Lassie when I was a little kid, I gave this dog way too much credit, and I was like, take me to your home! And so the dog starts pulling me, and, like, pulls me down this very long road in our neighborhood, because I had never seen the dog before. It was, like, a big dog, like a hound. No, as soon as we got to the end of this road, which was a dead end, it then wanted to take me down into the woods to the pond, and I was like, okay, nope, I thought you were smart and you were taking me home, but you're not. So I walked around with this dog. It was, like, dark. It was raining. It was so muggy. I was like, I'm gonna die. And I noticed, like, when I was walking it through the neighborhoods, like, hoping somebody would be like, hey, that's my dog, I kept seeing this police car go by on the main road. And finally, like, I walked up to the main road, and when it came back by, I, like, waved to the car, and he stopped. And he's like, do you have the missing dog? And I was like, I'm gonna go with yes. Yes, I think I have the missing dog. But I spent, like, 25 minutes walking the dog around, which was pretty cool.
Aww.
My husband was like, I was pretty sure you were going to come home with the dog and be like, I couldn't find its owner, so now I'm going to sleep in the garage with the dog tonight, and I'm going to go buy dog food. He's like, I had this whole scenario worked out where, like, you were living in the garage with the dog. And I was like, nope.
Aww.
Dog went home.
I love that in the dog's mind, he was probably like, I'm going to, like, take this human on a great adventure because I want to go into the woods. And his plan was foiled. But, aw, I'm glad you took care of him and found him a new home. Or not a new home, but his home, where he needs to go.
I forgot to ask. Like, I was so happy that, like, someone was taking him that I forgot to ask where he lived. So, I don't know where to take him if he comes back.
That's so funny.
Dog adventures! That's my fun story for the day. So, we are going to talk about books today, which I am very excited about. Before we do that, I want to remind you about the Deep Dive. This is Book Riot's newest newsletter. It is full of fascinating stories, informed takes, useful advice, and more. It is drawn from our collective experience as power readers, teachers, librarians, booksellers, and bookish professionals. You can subscribe to the Deep Dive, which is a bi-weekly newsletter that will inform and inspire readers delivered right to your inbox. Your first read, The Power Reader's Guide to Reading Logs and Trackers, is on the house. You can check out all these details and choose your membership level at bookriot.substack.com. Let's see, there's all kinds of things going on. Sharifa wrote the post about the Power Reader's Guide. Danica went down the rabbit hole about scratch and sniff books, which, like, she worked on that for a long time. I remember her asking us, like, does anybody know about these? Does anybody have these? Vanessa broke down the Mexican history of, like, water for chocolate. There's all kinds of things. So go to bookriot.substack.com and check that out. And now, before I tell you about the book I'm excited about, first, we are going to hear from a sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang. So this is an interesting love story. It's great for fans of Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and High Fidelity. It's set in the mid-90s at NYU. And it follows young Wang, who has gotten the advice of love through Chinese numerology from his uncle. So he believes that he will have 7 great loves in his life. And then he meets Irena in 95. And she's like the best. She's brilliant, charismatic, quick-witted, funny. They fall in love. But the thing is, she's number 6. So if he is to have 7 great loves, does that mean his time with Irena is going to come to an end? So this is a love letter to Western pop culture, Eastern traditions, and being a first-generation New Yorker. Make sure to check it out. And thanks again to Flatiron Books, publisher of 888 Love and the Divine Burden of Numbers by Abraham Chang, for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Thirsty by Jazz Hammonds. College student Blake and her girlfriend have one goal: join the exclusive sorority that promises connections to a network of trailblazing women of color. Now, Ella's acceptance is a sure thing. She's a daughter of a Serena Society alum. After all, Blake, on the other hand, lacks Ella's pedigree and her confidence. Luckily, though really unluckily, she finds courage at the bottom of a liquor bottle. When she drinks, she's bold and funny, and as pledging intensifies, so does Blake's drinking. Ella assures her that she's fine, partying hard is what it takes, but with her future on the line, Blake must decide how far she's willing to go to achieve glittering dreams of success. Now, just so you know, Jazz Hammonds is the 2023 winner of the Critics Scott King John Steptoe Award for New Talent for We Deserve Monuments, and We Deserve Monuments was an Amazon Best Books of the Year and Barnes & Noble Best Books of the Year for 2023, so suffice to say, y'all should check this new one out. Thanks again to Thirsty by Jazz Hammonds for sponsoring this episode.
All right. So, I have been super into horror. That's my main accent. It sounds so funny when I say horror, I'm pretty sure. Like, I just want to read horror all the time. Like, I'm really, like, leaning into it this summer. You know, for a while I backed off, but now I'm like, I want to read scary books and I want to read horror books and all this. So, I've been trying to get my hands on as much as I can. And so, I read this book, Night's Edge by Liz Karen. It's a debut, and it is a vampire novel, which is very exciting. Ooh. Because when I was a baby goth, I had like a whole bookcase full of vampire novels. I loved vampire novels. This is bloody fun. It reminded me a lot of some of the vampire books of the 1980s, and it's about a woman named Mia. We go back and forth in time from when she was 10 and now when she's 23. So they don't ever use the word vampire when they're discussing the people who have this affliction in the book. It's called Saras, which is short for the last name of the young boy who they believe spread the disease. So when Mia is 10, she's living in Utah with her mother. Her father is out of the picture. Her mother, Izzy, gets bit. Like, it's the beginning of, like, the Saras pandemic. And there's a lot of, like, the vampire things going on. If you get bit and you turn into Asaras, you can't go in the light, you'll burn up, you can't go without eating more than 2 days, and there's some very Audrey 2 rules in which the blood must be fresh and it must be human. I'm probably going to talk a lot more about blood, so just to give you a heads up there, if blood makes you feel faint, I'm going to say it a bunch more. But there are some other cool things about the Asaras afflicted in this book that you don't learn about in other vampire things, like they're allergic to coffee and caffeine, so people drink a ton of coffee to try and dissuade vampires from biting them. They can only come out at night. And so, like when it first happens, there's, like, a curfew. But then as the years go by, they make a machine where you can put your finger against a needle before you enter a building, and it tests your blood. And if you are free of the SARS disease, you can go inside. And there's not a lot of SARS in Utah, because apparently they're not big coffee drinkers in that state. So they thought they were safe there. But a lot of these people are just, like, getting bit all over the place. And the government is rounding them up and saying, oh, we're taking them to these nice places. But these people are never seen again. So the other side of this is now Mia is 23. She's living in Tucson with her mom. They've decided that they're going to make this work. They don't want her mother to go away and never come back. So her mother owns a bar, so she goes out at night, and they live a very secluded life. Mia works at a bookstore during the day. She doesn't have any friends. She's never had a relationship. She just goes home, and she and her mother, you know, take care of each other. Or mostly Mia takes care of her mother. Mia is the source that her mother feeds from. And she's also, she loves her daughter. She would do anything for her, which we'd see in some instances in the book. But also, she gets hangry. And when she's hangry, she's a horrible, mean person. Says terrible things. She's awful to Mia. So this is a really hard life for Mia. She loves her mother and she doesn't want anything to happen to her. But she's beginning to resent her because, you know, her mother is never going to age. In like 2 years, she'll be the same age as her mother was when she was bit. So like I said, no friends or dating. But then one day Mia goes into a Starbucks and she meets one of the baristas, Jade. And she just feels drawn to her. Like for some reason, she wants to know this woman. She wants to spend time with her. She's worried because one of the side effects of having SARS is that you can sort of impose your, not your will, but like people are drawn to you, like in that Dracula kind of way, you know, where Mina, you know, lets him in. They're very persuasive. And so she's worried, like, but like, is this woman is out during the day. So like, does she have SARS? And, like, there's some new strain where you can go out in the light because, like, she's on all the Facebook chat boards where they're talking about, like, it's just going to happen. It's eventually going to happen. There's going to be a mutation and they're going to be allowed out in the day. And what are we going to do then, you know? Or is she just drawn to this woman? And she, at the same time, she realizes her mother has started hiding things from her. Her mother is getting text messages. She's not showing up for shifts at work. And Mia has to be very careful when she asks her about these things because her mother has, like, superhuman strength and a quick temper, so she doesn't want to anger her mother. So she's trying to figure out, like, what her mother is doing, and she's worked so hard to keep her mother safe, and now her mother is, like, lying to her, which she never used to do. And so if she's going to behave like this, Mia decides, like, why shouldn't she behave how she wants? She's going to go for it. She starts going out. She goes to the bar. Like, she doesn't drink alcohol because her mother can taste it. But now she's like, she's going to drink. She's going to hang out with Jade and see where that goes. And as always in a lot of creature books, the real question is, who are the actual monsters? Mm-hmm. It's creative. I like the technology. The Facebook group is so realistic. Like, people leaving comments and stuff. It's fast paced. It's heartbreaking. You know, it's a metaphor for a lot of what goes on in this country. You know, the pandemic, the misinformation, the treatment of undocumented people, you know, abusive parents. You know, her mother loves her, but she can't control herself when she's hungry. It's a great addition to the vampire lore. And I noticed when I was writing the notes yesterday that it on Goodreads, it has a number one next to it. So I think there's going to be more in this story. I do want to give content warnings for violence, lots and lots and lots and lots of gore. Murder, child harm and endangerment, substance use and abuse, animal harm, a mass casualty event, and loss of a loved one. This is Night's Edge by Liz Caron.
Oh, that sounds really good.
It's really fun.
Yes.
And gross. Really gross.
Yeah, sounds it. It sounds like it, but, you know, not in a bad way, in an interesting way. All right, so my first pick of the day is 0 Days by Ruth Ware. And Ruth Ware has written a ton of great mystery thriller books. Like, I don't know. I forget how many she's written at this point, like 7 or 8.
I think this is 7.
Yeah.
No, you're right. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I've lost track.
I'm chiming in with no useful information.
But I appreciate your enthusiasm, Liberty. I have read every book that Ruth Ware has written because I really enjoy her stuff. I do feel like, you know, obviously with this many books, like some are going to be like more favorite reads than others. I admit that like I was not as into her last book as I was her previous stuff. So like when this one came out, it's definitely more like on the thriller edge than like mystery, although there is still good mystery into it. So I was like, I'm not sure. Well, you know, wasn't super into the last sort of book, but I was really into Zero Days. That like actually might be one of my favorites by her. So if you've ever seen the movie The Fugitive, it's kind of like The Fugitive, but it is about a woman named Jack and her husband Gabe, and they are what's known professionally as pen testers, which is short for penetration testers, which sounds like it should be a little dirty, but it's not. So basically, big companies and organizations hire them to basically test their security. So they will, like, Gabe is really good with computers and he's like this former hacker, and Jack is really good at like stealing and breaking and entering and just kind of getting past security. And she kind of had like this misspent youth where, you know, she was on a path to kind of becoming a criminal and somebody was like, no, like if you turn yourself around, like there are people who will like pay you for your skills in like an upright and legal way. So that is what Jack and Gabe have become. Like they professionally will work with companies like tech firms and insurance companies to just like break into their facilities to see what their security is like and see how far they can get. And so the book opens up with Jack and Gabe are on a job. Jack is the one like trying to break into the facility. Gabe's like at home on the computer, kind of being her backup, and they are talking to each other on the comms, and they're, you know, going through this whole process and you know, evaluating the security. And it's kind of like, you know, they're being hunted by the security people who are on there on the ground who don't realize that they are coming to do this test. And so it's like this really great intro to their relationship and their dynamics. And you realize like, oh, they're the good guys. And then so it's pretty late. Jack heads home. When she gets home, Gabe is unfortunately dead. He is slumped over in his desk at his computer and he has been shot through the head. And so Jack is shocked and devastated and horrified. She calls the police. The police come. But unfortunately, when you are in the line of work that Jack and Gabe are in, and you know, one spouse ends up dead, they're always going to kind of be pointing the finger at Jack. And unfortunately for Jack, it took her longer than usual to get home because she took a wrong turn. So there is a gap in her timeline where they think that she could have killed Gabe. And very soon after that, Jack decides that like, if she's going to figure out who really killed Gabe, she has to go on the run. And so that's what she does. And so this book takes place over the course of like 5 or 6 days as she is racing to figure out who actually killed her husband and why. And she has to use all the skills in her arsenal to figure that out. So the mystery is maybe not like quite as convoluted as some of the mysteries in her previous books are, but it had some really good twists, some really good beats, and it is very much a good thriller where I think it's difficult for an author to like sustain like the amount of tension needed to, you know, make this book so like thrilling and like having you be on the edge of your seat. But this author does it super well. So that is Zero Days by Ruth Ware. I really enjoyed it and I hope you guys do too.
I still need to read that one.
It was fun.
There's also another book with zero in the title, I think, where people, Game Zero, I can't remember, where like they have to elude security and run around, and maybe I'll read them together.
There you go. Yeah, it'd be nice little, like I read this and I was like, it's kind of silly, but I think I want to watch The Fugitive now. So it was fun.
Yeah, it also reminds me a little bit of Leverage, like with the whole getting paid to like break into things, which is a fun show. So now for something completely different, my next pick is You're Not Supposed to Die Tonight by Kaylin Bayron. Bayron is the author of so many great books now. I love them, like Cinderella is Dead, This Poison Heart, My Dear Henry, which is the Jekyll and Hyde remix, The Vanquishers, which is a middle grade novel. So much fun. This is a fun, scary YA novel that plays with the final girl horror trope. So in 1983, there was a slasher film that came out that took place at Camp Mirror Lake. It's not a real place, but they made this, like, horror film, and people love it. It's the usual slasher film, like, out of camp, like, you know, camper and killer tropes, you know, all the things that you're not supposed to do. And it's not, like, a huge hit, but people really enjoyed it. Well, now, the location where Camp Mirror Lake was shot is a full contact horror experience, which makes me just break out in sweat just saying those three words. And so people sign up to be campers for a day at this camp, and the staff, you know, play victims, and they run around all night in the dark, and the killer chases them, and the idea is to, like, survive the night. And if you survive the night, you get a t-shirt. And so Charity is a queer black teen who is obsessed with horror films. And so she's living her dream because she works at Camp Mirror Lake. She quickly went from behind the scenes to an unnamed victim to the final girl. She is the one who survives the night. She's also the boss, basically. She's in charge of everyone else. And she's thrilled because there's that trope in horror, which they call the black guy dies first. But she's always the one left. So she's, you know, changing up that trope. The guy who owns the camp, these are teenagers, like, running this place. He is supposed to be there. There is supposed to always be an adult on the premises, but he's never there. He's, like, super lazy and, like, doesn't go in hardly ever. And he thinks Charity does such a great job. Like, he's really not needed. And everything usually goes great, so it's fine. So at the start of this book, this is Charity's third summer at Camp Crystal Lake. It's the last days of the summer. They're down to their last few nights of scaring people. And she's really bummed because she loves her job, and she hates her mother's boyfriend. She doesn't want to return home because he's there. And so, a few days before the end of the season, she starts hearing noises in the lake at night. Like, while they're running around and scaring people, like, she hears things, she thinks she might see something. It sounds like something's dropping in the lake. But it's also that she's tired, she's overworked, because three of the workers left without saying goodbye. Just, like, cut out on the last few days of the season, and it's happened before, and, you know, people are like, oh, I don't want to do all the breaking down of the set and everything because it's hard work. And so she's, you know, but, like, three people leave at the same time. It's kind of a lot. So she calls her friends and her girlfriend to come help her, and they get up there. After she tries calling them, like, a bunch of times because it's hard to get a signal in the woods, and the phone service doesn't work very well, and the staff car isn't running because, of course, it isn't. Dun dun. But then scary things start happening that they can't explain. And one of her friends tells them that she Googled the place and looked up information about Camp Mirror Lake before she came to visit in old newspapers on microfiche, which she calls old school PowerPoint. And there's all these, like, stories that no one has heard there because they were told that this was a set of a horror film that just was left standing. And as things start to get scary that night, you know, they're pointing out all the things you are not supposed to do if you're in a horror film, you know, like, never go off on your own, never hook up with somebody, you know, don't investigate what that noise is. And then after an incident in which the police have to come, the owner calls and tells them to cancel the final day, but that night gets entirely too real, and who will survive the night? It's really fun, and it's really scary. I was like, it's a YA novel, so I'm gonna read it in the middle of the night. And I had to put it down because I was scared. A lot of it is the anticipation, right? Because you're literally in a place where people are dressed up like horror victims in horror movies. And so if they see somebody, like, is that going to turn out to be an actor? Or is that going to be, like, something real that she can't explain? You know, is that body on the ground over there with blood all over it? Is that an actor? Or when she gets up to it, is she going to find a dead body? Like, you just don't know! You know, it reminded me of, like, Lois Duncan and Christopher Pike, which I read all of those when I was a kid. Plus, if you want more scary, full-contact horror, I highly recommend reading Reprieve by James Han Madsen. And if you want more, like, horror movie expert lives the horror movie dream, check out My Heart is a Chainsaw by Stephen Graham Jones. This, of course, has some content warnings because it's based on a horror movie, including blood, gore, violence, murder, animal death, police harassment, racism, and sexism. This is You Are Not Supposed to Die Tonight by Kaylin Bayron. Tee hee hee. I love horror.
I love it. I was so excited to read this book. I have it on reserve at my library. Yeah, I also love Kaylin Bayron's books. I've not read them all, but I've read a lot of them. And yeah, this one just looks amazing. So,
oh, can I say one more thing? Because I almost forgot to say this thing. So I didn't mean to read two horror novels for the podcast this week, but it turns out that the other book that I was going to talk about is possibly one of the sponsors for the show because, you know, we do, like, the inserts of ads now. So I just want to mention this because we don't endorse books that are sponsors, but I do love it so much, and I have talked about it in multiple places. And it is Lucky Red by Claudia Craven, and it's so good. It's a queer Western, and I loved it so much. So I was going to talk about that one, but I didn't get to, so please check it out on yourself. Check it out on yourself. Check it out on your own. It's Lucky Red by Claudia Cravens, and it's so good.
You were telling me about this one a couple months back. You were like, oh my gosh, this book. And I was like, okay, I'm going to add it to my list. So, okay, thank you for the reminder.
Yep. They sent the ad sheet, and I was like, ah, shucks.
Ain't that just the way.
I almost said Gravity Falls. That's not Gravity Falls. It's Over the Garden Wall.
Yes. Good
Over the Garden Wall reference.
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Okay. We're nerding out so much over here. But. All right. My next pick is This Town is on Fire by Pamela N. Harris. This is, oh my gosh, where do we begin with this book? I mean, I have to say, first of all, like, all the content warnings for, like, racial slurs and microaggressions and then, like, macroaggressions, is that a term? But, like, you know, just a lot of racial violence and also racism in general for this book. So just take care of yourself before picking this up. But this book is about Naomi. Naomi is Black, and she is starting her senior year of high school. She is hoping to land a spot on the varsity cheer team. She has a best friend named Kylie. Kylie is white, and they have been pretty close, and she has, like, you know, this big crush on Kylie's twin brother. They are in the same friend group. They've always hung out with each other. So they have an interesting dynamic, though, because Kylie, not just because Naomi's Black and Kylie's white, but, like, how they are so close is because Naomi's mom was basically Kylie and her twin brother's nanny for many years. And so Naomi and Kylie, and Connor is the twin brother's name, they've always just kind of, like, grown up together. And so now Naomi's mom is obviously no longer their nanny because they're almost 18, but she has her own daycare that she runs. But ever since, you know, her mom has, like, started her own new daycare and they've gotten older, like, the relationship has just kind of shifted a little bit. Like, sometimes she senses that her mom's a little bit more judgmental of Kylie. And, you know, Naomi is also kind of feeling like there are things that she would like to do that she feels like maybe she can't necessarily do because Kylie expects that they will do things together, like cheer. Naomi secretly kind of wants to quit cheer and join the dance team, but she is sticking by her best friend. So very early on in the book, this is like in the first or second chapter, after the first day of school, Kylie wants Naomi to come to Target with her, and Naomi's like, no, I've got to go hang out with my mom, but, you know, I'll catch you later. And then, like, she wakes up the next morning, and Kylie's, like, not at school, and she's not really returning text messages, and she gets to school, and as she gets to school, she discovers that the previous day when Kylie went to Target, she had an altercation with a Black teen, and she called the police on him for, you know, just very bogus reasons, like, you know, just really silly. Like, she was definitely being, like, the Central Park Karen, and there's no reason for her to call the cops, and she definitely did that out of a place of, well, Naomi isn't really sure, because she thinks that, like, oh, Kylie's a good person, she's my best friend, like, I'm Black, why would she do this? But at the same time, she's also kind of like, what the heck? Like, you don't just call the police, especially to, you know, report that a Black you know, young man is threatening you when he's really not. And the whole thing is caught on video and it's posted on the internet and it goes viral. And all of a sudden, Naomi is in like this very awkward position of like, people are like, why are you friends with her? And Naomi's also dealing with like what she, her own, you know, just complicated and conflicted feelings about what Kylie did. So Kylie is, you know, kind of sticking to her reasoning into what happened. But Naomi is also trying to figure out, like, what does it mean to still be friends with her? Can I still be friends with her? And if I can be friends with her still, like, what does it mean for, like, the friendships in our wider circle? Most of the friends that she has at the school are white. And she's also getting to know some of the Black students that she's kind of always known from afar. And they have their own opinions about everything. So tensions are escalating. And of course, to add to the stakes, the first chapter of this book is you kind of get a glimpse of the end of the book where a bomb has just gone off and Naomi gets arrested for planting the bomb. And so there's a lot of back and forth between, you know, this bomb and then like a week earlier when this whole thing kicks off. So really tense book. It reminded me a little bit of, what is the Tiffany D. Jackson book that's not White Smoke, but the other one that's the Carrie retelling? I'm blanking on the title.
I can't think of the title either.
That has blood in it. Yes.
Goodness gracious. I'm now Googling. Because, of course, The Weight of Blood.
The Weight of Blood, yes. Yeah. I was like, yes, this is blood,
like,
in it.
You're getting a glimpse into my life watching Jeopardy. Like, I can always come up with the answers, usually, but I can't do them that quickly.
It takes a second. Yes. Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of The Weight of Blood because you have, like, a contemporary Southern setting with, like, characters that are dealing with the tensions and the really, you know, just like the very real issues of like the fallout of like racist incidents. You know, obviously The Weight of Blood has a little bit of a supernatural air to it that this one doesn't, but similar vibes. And I was just really entranced by this book. Like, I started reading it and I could not put it down. So it is This Town is on Fire by Pamela N. Harris.
All right, and now we are going to hear from another sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Greenleaf Book Group. No summer vacation should be without a great read, and I don't know about you, but I am partial to mysteries and thrillers for my hot month reads. It's hot girl reading summer, always over here. And from the award-winning librettist of Legally Blonde, the musical, and the screenwriter of Freaky Friday, Heather Hawke, comes the page-turning psychological thriller, The Trouble with Drowning. So when author Eden Hart floats into Tucson's Antigone Books in all her dazzling perfection to give a reading, Kat, a struggling writer, can't help but compare herself. Thankfully, Kat's life starts to take on its own Eden-like glow when her literary future takes shape and she falls madly in love with Jacob. As demons from her past begin to surface, Kat's mental health craters, and this halcyon dream slips through her fingers. For the fastest-paced, slow burn you won't be able to put down, be sure to check out The Trouble with Drowning by Heather Hawke on Amazon or your retailer of choice. And thanks again to Greenleaf Book Group for sponsoring this episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Sourcebooks Landmark. So King Solomon says something very interesting to his son before he dies, and that is, quote, "Don't let the white man take the house," end quote. These, as I just mentioned, are King Solomon's last words to his son as he dies. Now, all four Solomon siblings must return to North Carolina to save the kingdom, their ancestral home, and 200 acres of land from a development company. Told in alternating viewpoints, Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris, is a searing portrait of the power of family and letting go of things that no longer serve you, exploring the burden of familial expectations, the detriment of miscommunication, and the lessons and legacies we pass on to our children. It's an explosive and emotional story of four siblings, each fighting their own personal battle, because who isn't, who return home in the wake of their father's death. Make sure to check out Long After We Are Gone by Tara Shelton Harris. And thanks again to Sourcebooks Landmark for sponsoring this episode.
Okay, so you and I talked for so long about the books that we read and loved because we love them and we didn't want to shut up about them. We are now going to talk about some more books that we are excited about that we possibly haven't read yet, but we're going to do it a little quicker because we talked for so long. I'm going to kick it off with A Holding Pattern by Jenny Z. This is a debut novel getting a lot of buzz. It's out from Riverhead. They're awesome. It's about a young woman named Kathleen whose life is kind of coming apart. She's had a really bad breakup and she's dropped out of graduate school and she doesn't know what to do. So she decides she's going to return home to Oakland and what she knows. You know, she's going to go live with her mother for a little while or at least visit. And get the comfort, you know, that she thinks she's going to receive and just kind of like lick her wounds. But when she gets to Oakland, her mother is a very different person. She's now this woman who's vibrant and full of life. And those are probably the same words. And she's getting ready to marry a Silicon Valley tech entrepreneur. And so this is not the woman that Kathleen remembers. And she finds herself instead of like healing from her problems, which might be a little selfishly, she's helping her mother plan for her wedding, and she's having these complicated feelings about past hurts and her present needs. It sounds fantastic. It is Holding Pattern by Jenny Z.
Ooh, that sounds good. My next pick that I'm excited about is Where Echoes Die by Courtney Gould, and it is about Beck, and her mother has recently died. Her mom was an investigative reporter, and so she's really struggling with the death of her mom. And then she gets this letter in the mail, and it is in her mom's handwriting, her mom who's been dead for a while, that says, come find me. And it basically gives her instructions to like this map with a small town. And she decides like, okay, I got to go there. I got to figure out what's going on. So Beck and her sister Riley go to the small town in Arizona, and something is definitely very, very weird going on. Like there's, you know, like weird new construction, but there's like no cars, there's no churches, which like if you've ever been to a small town and there's not a church, like, you know, something's up. And so she is very confused by like what it is that her mom, you know, might have been doing here, or what the connection is with her mom. And then she meets like the leader of the town who's like very charismatic, and you know, she just suspects that there's like something more going on than what meets the eye. So this is like supposed to be obviously a mystery, queer, supernatural. I think the cover is totally awesome. So I'm really excited to pick this one up. It's Where Echoes Die by Courtney Gould.
All right. My next one is one that I am also looking forward to reading. It is 19 Claws and a Blackbird Stories by Augustina Baz Tirica and translated by Sarah Moses. You might recognize the author's name. Her last book, Tender is the Flesh, became a viral TikTok sensation. It's a dystopian novel where food is scarce, so humans have started raising other humans for consumption. Which reminded me of a novel that I read in 2010 and really enjoyed called Animals by Don LaPan. And if you had, Liberty has read a lot of books about cannibals on your bingo card, go ahead and check that off now. So 19 Claws is a collection of stories. And in reading the description of this, I felt like I had too much spoiled for me already. So I'm not going to mention what they say the stories are about specifically, just that they sound dark and weird and disturbing, like Tender is the Flesh. I'm hoping it's as great and upsetting as the recent collections I've read and loved, like Cursed Bunny by Bora Chung and Life Ceremony by Sayaka Murata. So I'm going to find out when I read this. It is 19 Claws and a Blackbird Stories by Augustina Baz Tirica and translated by Sarah Moses.
Awesome. So my final pick is Ode to My First Car by Robin Gao, which I think is a fantastic title. So it is about a girl named Claire. She's bisexual, but she is closeted and she is falling in love with her best friend. And that is complicated. So she also has recently lost her first car. There was a crash. Her car was totaled. She loved her car so much. But so she needs to get a new car, and she takes a job at a local nursing home to raise money to get a new car. And there she meets this older woman who's almost 90, and she is lesbian, and she tells Claire like all of her stories about what it was like to grow up as a lesbian in the 50s and 60s. And that is really great for Claire because she is learning that, you know, there's like people have had it hard, but also like she can be brave, and she's feeling her self-confidence grow. But just as she's feeling like maybe she can confess her feelings for Sophia, a new girl walks into her life, and now she's feeling kind of caught between like, does she confess her feelings to her best friend, or does she take a chance on new love? I think this one sounds great. And I also really like that this is a book that includes just perspectives from queer elders, which is really awesome. And I think it's only been kind of recently that I have really started to sort of think more deeply about like what it means to have like an open and out LGBTQ population that is aging. And so I love that we get this perspective in this young adult book. That is Ode to My First Car by Robin Gao.
All right. Those are books that we have read and enjoyed and books we are excited about. And now it is time for the paperback lightning round. And I'm going to start with Nuclear Family by Joseph Han. This is about a Korean couple who moved to the States to achieve the American dream. They now have a successful restaurant in Hawaii. And then they get the news that their grown son has been detained trying to cross the Korean demilitarized zone into North Korea. They don't understand what's happening. They're embarrassed. They're confused. Because they don't know that he has been taken over by the ghost of his grandfather, who wants to return to North Korea and see his family one last time. Ancestor Trouble, A Reckoning and a Reconciliation by Maude Newton. This is wonderful nonfiction. Newton grew up hearing the story that someone in her family had murdered someone, and this is where researching that story led her and what she found. More Than You'll Ever Know by Katie Gutierrez. This is a book club pick from last year. I think it was like a Today Show pick or a Good Morning America, one of those. It's really fun.
I loved it. Yeah. Oh, great. I'm sorry. Yeah. I love this book so much. It was one of my favorite books that I read last year. So, yay! Okay, go ahead.
It's about a journalist who is investigating a story from many years ago of a woman who is married to two men, which ended in tragedy when one of the husbands killed the other. Gods of Want Stories by Kaiming Chang. This just won the 2023 Lambda Literary Award, the Lammy, for lesbian fiction. It was on a bunch of end-of-the-year lists. It's really high on my TBR. I can't wait to read it. Sister, Mother, Warrior by Vanessa Riley. This is a fictionalized account of the Haitian Revolution told through two real-life women, the first Empress of Haiti and a West African-born warrior. Complicit by Winnie M. Lee, about a former film producer turned teacher who is approached by a journalist who wants to interview her about her former boss. It is now the time of Me Too, and the accusations against him are piling up. And as she talks to the journalist, she looks back on her life and wonders if she was complicit in any way in his behavior. And a paperback original out today, Everything the Darkness Eats by Eric LaRocca. The name might sound familiar because LaRocca had a huge internet hit with Things Have Gotten Worse Since We Last Spoke, a collection of horror stories. It was such a big hit that like the small publisher was impossible to get for a really long time, and a larger publisher picked it up and reissued it. And this is his new novel. It's about trying to find out what is behind a series of bizarre disappearances in a Connecticut town. So those are our paperbacks. Tirza, what are you going to read next?
Oh my gosh, I didn't prepare for this question. Usually I prepare for this.
Do you want me to go? I'll do it. And then yes, you can go. All right. So I have mentioned before, I am a sucker for a very large book. And I saw a book on Instagram that was like as tall as a soda can. And I was like, what is that book? I need it. It turns out it has a great history. It's called Divine Days by Leon Forrest. It's about 1 week in the life of a black playwright in 1966. It's been out of print for a really long time, came back into print in February. It's just under 1,200 pages. Henry Louis Gates Jr. calls this the War and Peace of African American Literature, and Toni Morrison blurbed it when it came out and said, "Life has no more astute observer than Leon Forrest." So there is this little thing on the back that sounded really interesting. It said that this edition brings Forrest's masterpiece back into print, incorporating hundreds of editorial changes that the author had requested but were never made when the book was picked up by W.W. Norton after a disastrous warehouse fire destroyed most of the inventory from the original printing of the book by another Chicago press. That's another Chicago press, proper noun, not just a press in Chicago. So it sounds really cool. And also, I love a giant book. Like, I can't resist them. I love giant books. And I'm also, I'm going to start This Wretched Valley by Jenny Kiefer, which is a horror novel about a hiking trip gone horribly wrong, which sounds like every horror trip that, I mean, every horror trip? No, every hiking trip that I imagine going on. That comes out in January. So what are you going to read next?
Okay, I've decided, because like, right, you know, I'm in the process of moving, so I have like a bunch of books everywhere, and I'm at that point where I have to make a decision about what books I need to pack versus what books I'm going to actually read in like the next month before, you know, I actually get everything in the truck and go. So I was like, oh my gosh, decision fatigue. But I just pulled out, I forgot that I had a copy of Detransition Baby by Tori Peters. Ooh. So I'm going to pick that one up because it's been on my TBR forever. So, it's at the top of my list, or at the top of my pile, actually. So I'm going to read that one next.
Yeah. Optimism can really get you, especially when you're moving. Like, I can read these books and not have to move with them.
No, it's, we're very close to having to face some hard truths. And the hard truth is that I have too many books.
No such thing. All right, that is all for today. You can check out the deep dive at bookriot.substack.com. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink. You won't know this, but all the mistakes were mine today. You can drop us a line at allthebooks@bookriot.com. You can find us online. Tirza, where do you hang out?
Mostly on Instagram at @tirzaprice.
All right, and I am mostly on Instagram at @friendsandcomesalive, although I am over on Blue Sky now, like, testing those waters, which is like, really, I should say something about the sky because it's Blue Sky. But anyway, stay tuned for Blue Sky information. And if you want to give us a treat, you can go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever it is that you get your podcast and leave a rating or review. It helps other book lovers to find us, and we greatly appreciate it. And as much as we would love to tell you about more books today, we just don't have the time, but you can read about more titles out now in the show notes at bookriot.com/allthebooks, as well as a link to our weekly new books newsletter. And for more recs or general bookishness, check out bookriot.com. And don't forget to check out our full stable of podcasts at bookriot.com/listen, or just search Book Riot on your podcast player of choice. And in the meantime,
happy reading.